Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Range Rover Rumble. My name's Matthew Priddy, and this is the Historic Refuel Podcast.
Where we'll be pitting the L322 Range Rover against its predecessor, the first modern Range Rover, the P38.
So stick around to the end, as we will be telling you five things that you won't already know about these two iconic cars.
Buying or selling a classic car? Head to historics.co.uk or click below for a free valuation.
Now, if you want to keep up to date with Historics on our social platforms, please do like and subscribe. And of course, if you're watching on YouTube, do click that bell icon to be kept up to date. Now, chaps, given that we're talking about these wonderful Holland & Holland and Range Rovers, hence the gun in front of us, what quantifies you two to tell me which one is the best?
Although the L322 has got loads of things to write home about, I really like them myself, owned one for a while. I'm going to put my hat in the ring of the P38. Okay. Car was launched 2 months before I started my own career in the motor trade. I started at Jaguar Mayfair Land Rover.
Like when it was black and white TV, isn't it?
Pretty much. So this car was launched in September 94. I started a couple of months later. So it's got a really special place in my history with cars.
And when
it came out, it was so different from the car it replaced. It's got so much to I'll tell you all about in a moment.
Right. Okay. And John, so you're going to be pitching, I hope, for the modern one then, in that case.
Yes, I've driven plenty of both models over the years, never owned either. But I remember the 322 being launched, and I was working at a Jaguar Land Rover dealership at the time and borrowing one, and just the sea change in that model over the previous, its predecessor, was absolutely huge.
Right, so let's get straight into round one. So round one would be the design of the pair of them. Now, we've got, as I said, two Holland & Holland examples. So sort of the upper possible echelons of these two models. But generally across the brands, what would you say set it apart and would pitch the P38 above maybe the L322 on design?
Difficult, because the L322 takes a lot of its styling cues from the P38, which itself was following from the classic car. You know, they've all got a similarity, and if you line up any Range Rover, you can see where the DNA lines up. P38 was just like John said, a sea change from the car it replaced. So the classic car was nothing like this. It was such an exciting time.
I suppose the classic, anyone that did it in the classic was the CSK. That was the only car that they put a bit of luxury into.
Based on the Charles Spencer King. This car had £300 million spent. It was when it was owned by Rover. So £300 million spent developing the car. Okay, in today's terms, not a great deal, but 30 years ago, it was a chunk of money. One of the very first of the executive off-road cars. You know, now we see them everywhere, don't we? 4x4 has become a real popular statement. In those early days, Range Rover was an early adopter, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, because there were special editions of those earlier cars, such as the classic, but no one had really put it into production, whereas that P30, it was really the first production luxury, wasn't it? It was the first time that, you know, you wouldn't be washing it out afterwards. It was off-road, but it wasn't necessarily built for the off-road chaps.
I think also they didn't have that many competitors in that marketplace at that time. The sort of later were the obviously the ML Mercedes, the X5 BMW.
They would have competed, of course, with your choice.
Yes, absolutely. But they actually came before, but sort of between the two. So at that time, they didn't have that much competition.
Yeah, so strangely, this sort of came out and was the sea change, and then very quickly sort of became old because their competitors very, very swiftly thought, well, hang on a minute, let's get in on this marketplace. This is a whole new way to sell cars. Because I was reading up on the P38 about designs, and obviously what they originally wanted to do was have this, as they always do, a bit like 911, they wanted to have this evolution of design, and they had all of the big design houses in the world, really, try and create designs. We had, I just wrote it down now, we had Pininfarina, Italia Design, Bertone, and then British Design, and both John Hefferman and Ken Greenlee all had a crack at making the design. And only two went into sort of that.
And it was done in-house, wasn't it, in the end?
In the end, they went, well, actually, none of those really work. We'll stick with the in-house one. Because
it's the only in-house guys who understood where it had come from and where it needed to go.
And someone's famously quoted that all the other designs had sort of lost the wellies.
Yeah.
So they went for that sort of slightly more deliberate.
And it was the last Range Rover that you could still have manual transmission, cloth-seated. So it still had a practical side to it. Yeah. But then, and we've seen where that evolution has gone since the launch of that car. The car that replaced this one. It's just got more and more luxurious, hasn't it?
But the difference between these two particularly, I mean, there used to be evolution rather than revolution, but I think with this, it was revolution. It was such a massive difference.
He's landing a haymaker there.
Going from the Rover-derived car to the sort of well, BMW engines and what have you, and then latterly the Jaguar influence. Which
this is the first car that was launched under BMW's ownership. So although it was developed with Rover's money, BMW had taken over, and this car was launched
halfway through, wasn't it?
Well, they were owned by BMW. Right.
Yeah, was it Rover that got taken over by Ford? At that point, there was a deal to keep to finish this product before it went into the BMW.
And Rover had been owned by a few people.
Honestly, yeah. But it was obviously the engines that the main reason, because obviously you think went towards BMW engines. But this car, I'll be honest with you, I favour of the two this one at this point from a design perspective, because I actually think it reflects the original Range Rover Classic a little bit closer. It's feels higher,
sure,
a little bit more of that shape. Even got little throwbacks on the early pre-facelift cars, those silver fins, which were sort of a throwback to the ducks that you'd have on the original Classics.
I think some of the sort of ruder critics of the earlier car sort of compared it to a London taxi at certain points, which was a bit harsh.
Mr. Clarkson might have mentioned
it. Whereas the later car, I think, personally, I think has become a classic, a modern classic.
As we see them, they've become so refined, they've almost lost their 4x4 part of it. But this now has become, I think, particularly keen. If you look through a lot of classics-wise, and with regards to a lot of social media and a lot of motoring journalists, have a big soft spot for the design and appeal. Presumably,
and actually, until the very, very latest models, still looked very, very similar.
Exactly.
Very little change at a glance.
And would you say on this one, phase one or phase two? I mean, I'm a big phase two fan rather than phase one on them personally.
Phase one was handy because you broke down in your MG coming back from Silverstone, and I picked you up in one of those to take you home.
Yes, but, thanks, mate.
You're right.
Is that one all?
Okay. So, design-wise,
I wrote it down. Autocar said about the P38 that it had effortless on-road performance and unimpeachable off-road authority. And I think that's where Land Rover. See, nice.
Was he on the payroll?
Right. Yeah, and I did my homework this morning. Got that 18% stiffer than the previous car. You know, a whole sea change. And when we look back, you go, yeah, but it's nothing like. But at the time, you've got to remember, it was revolutionary, like John said.
Yeah,
it's just so much different from the car that it replaced.
I think that was the main thing on design.
Such an exciting
that's
time.
Perhaps
it's
where
sea
it...
change, your new word. You like that?
Right. Okay. Ding ding. Round two. Now this is, I think, you're going to struggle with this one. I think performance. Now, bear in mind, these both came in. Both come in at rather hefty weights, 2.2 and 2.7 tons, give or take. They both weighed a ton. They both had, personally, I think, terrible entry-level diesels, and then they eventually got slightly better diesels.
Yeah, I mean, the later V8 diesel were probably the biggest seller
definitely.
Of all, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly, especially on this car. But obviously, we've got two Holland Hons. These had the big boy petrol engines in. So I think it was a 4.6 litre V8 from BMW in this one. And this one had the 5 litre supercharged, I am Bruce Lee kind of, throwing so much at it. Performance terms, now, as you said, and you're quite right, the keen buyer always bought these in diesel form. The original diesel on this was horrific, the 2.5 litre diesel. I must say, I've driven a few of them. I'm not a fan.
But these ones, as the Holland and Holland, they were sort of flagship, absolute pinnacle. So it wasn't about economy. It was about having the ultimate.
It was no cost spec.
Exactly.
You know. The rear screen entertainment for that car with the big...
Jumping into round three. It's round two. Yeah. Come on. Losing this round, it's because you've got him nailed on performance. That's what it is.
Okay.
He's
going.
Worried. Come on. Tell me why the performance of this car is worthy of its credibility. You can't, can you?
I can't.
No. That's the one thing I think that at this stage, it was quite utilitarian under the bonnet. Even with the V8, I think it was still quite utilitarian. That said, and we spoke about this before.
But there weren't the big performance SUVs then. No. There were none that I can...
Careful, you don't want to give them a head up here. But the one thing they did have in their bag, which they should have done, especially for something like this, was they did have a development V12.
Yeah, it was on the cars, wasn't it? It was on the cars, but it didn't happen.
It used the V12 from the BMW 7 Series, and it just never really came through. And I think if they'd have done that, with something like this...
But they didn't sell that many of them in the 750, did they? So, I don't know.
But you see, again, looking at the latest ones, you go to the Rolls-Royce Cullinan, obviously that's extremely expensive, but with these massive engines, Lamborghini getting into the fray, it's, you know, some of those now would actually probably work.
Yeah, this is very true. So... onto the 5-litre supercharged, and to be fair, the rest of the engine in this one, which I think is everything. I've driven a few of those 5-litres, and it's strange because that engine's in a lot of cars. It doesn't feel overly sort of powerful, but it obviously clearly is. but a lot of people pitched for the diesel. Holland and Holland's wise as well, because you could buy this with a 4.4 litre V8 diesel, and only a few were supplied with this 5-litre supercharged. Which one would you have picked?
Personally, I'd have gone for the Jaguar engine, the supercharged. Because if you were going to that level of expense and having such a bespoke car with all the interior and what have you, you're going to go for the best.
You're just going to get everything ticked.
You know, as an everyday car, the normal Range Rover, you would probably have the diesel. But
yeah. I wrote them down here just to give you a few stats. Everyone loves a stat, don't they? So on the original P38, and let's say 4.6 litre V8 was 218 brake horsepower. Oh, no, that was, yeah, 218 brake horsepower. It came down in brake horsepower when they did the revised engine, but it went up the torque, which obviously, you know, is a big thing with these. And it's at 300 foot-pound of torque. So it was okay, but it was a heavy old car. The big difference when you get up into the larger engined 322, I mean, it's 2.7 tonnes. It's probably mainly all those leather bits and pieces stuck in there. But the 5-litre supercharged, that was 500 brake horsepower, 503. But it had 461 foot-pounds of torque. That's a lot for a petrol.
But obviously it came at two costs. Obviously the purchase price and, of course, the running cost. I mean, the fuel consumption, if you read the contemporary articles of that actual car and that car features, they all comment as that actually, you know, pass anything but a petrol station.
Exactly that. So you'd be spending a lot of time there. Whereas that 4.4-litre DDV8, which was the keen buyer's choice, that was 309 brake horsepower, so that's pretty sensible for a diesel, and 516 foot-pounds. So that would have been the choice, but equally, you're right. If you're going for a Holland, you're going to buy the big one. So round two with performance, I think you might be behind on that stakes. So round three, creature comforts. Now, I don't think you should be fairly saying which one's got the best creature comforts, because that, you know, ultimately they are entire decades apart. But of their time, and this is where you could pull some punches.
See, this is where the P38 wins on all of these categories, because it's of its time, isn't it? And it was the first time that things like that had happened, the first time that they'd had rear screen entertainment, first time VCR, and for those young viewers out there, video cassette recorder, I've explained to Fraser what that is. Fraser's a young chap in our
Fraser
office.
Fraser doesn't watch movies anyways, let alone with a VCR.
However, it was a £10,000 option in this car.
What?
£10,000 option for VCR rear screen entertainment.
£10,000?
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, so it's like a you know, a £300 iPad.
Yes.
In today's
money. Because we said, well, they're all kind of pointless nowadays. You just want something to hang your iPad on for the kids in the back, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I noticed they've got these little kids cans. They've got all those things. But of course, they also had air suspension on the P38.
Air suspension, Connolly leather, just
all electrics, heated seats.
You could pay extra and have a £3,000 wood veneer fascia option as well.
Oh, well, with this and things, with the Holland and Holland ones, part of the option was you could have the wood in these cars. I think it might be the later car, actually. It could have been on both. You can have the wood from your gun replicated on the veneers on all your cars.
And that's the sort of detailing that prior to that was only been done by the likes of Rolls-Royce, Bentley, Aston Martin, where you have that absolute bespoke finish. So this was a new thing to have a bespoke big Range Rover.
Yeah, okay. So creature comforts on this one are amazing of its time.
Yeah.
Creature comforts on the L22. Now, that 322 is actually still, to this day, I think pretty impressive. It's got that full LED sort of digital dash. Everything's heated.
TFT, thin film transistor screen.
They always spook me because I always look and think, when's that going to go wrong? When's all the dead pixels going to come up like the 80s cars? So that had an incredible amount of
extras. Well, the standard car was so luxurious, there was less work to do on the later car to personalise, well, not to personalise it, but to make it more luxurious. Yeah. But it was just about then personalisation.
Yeah. Did you sell much in the way of optional extras beyond that? Did you sell any of these?
Well, in 2010, I sold the most of the L322s in the UK.
Right, so everyone, it's Dom's fault you've got one and you're spending all this
and
money.
Nothing to do with my...
And he doesn't like to talk about it, though.
Nothing to do with my... Thank you, John. My particular skill set. I worked in Mayfair. Well, we only ever sold Range Rovers, really. We weren't even sure what a Freelander was at those times.
Too posh. So in Mayfair, just everyone buying Range Rovers.
Yeah, which is ironic, isn't it? Because it's the best 4x4x4, whereas, you know, some customers said, yeah, well, some of the curbs are quite... pretty steep on Piccadilly.
Well, the Chelsea tractor sort of adage came at about that time, I would have said.
Suddenly
it became the wealthy wives of Knightsbridge.
You sold more in London than they did in the countryside.
Yeah.
Tell us that story. What are the sort of Range Rover...
Oh, you'll be on a Range Rover course and people will say, oh, you're from Mayfair, you know, let's listen to your inflated stories again. And, you know, and I used to say, what's that? And they said, oh, it's a Freelander. I said, I don't think we've got those yet. They used to hate us. But of course, it's not just about that. I mean, it's an executive car, but is it? But it's the safest place for you to put your kids. So if you're wealthy, and you might be Chelsea housewife, but if you want your kids to be safe, the Range Rover's the place to put them.
Yeah, right? I mean, the whole thing was the high driving position.
Yeah, I mean, it's a status, of course it is.
But, and actually, the high driving position, if you're not off-roading in London, is actually most beneficial, strangely enough. Driving around in
normal
towns,
you see the cyclists you're about to run over.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's difficult for them to hang on to the bonnet. I think that's a valid point.
Okay, so I think that's a close call in round three. I think, you know, I get that because that was a sea change and massively spec'd. And actually, some of the specification in them isn't that different other than the little buttons and presses. I mean, that has got fridges and what have you, but you could equally put things like that into the older car. Slipping in a round four here about how these cars have, and it probably sits back to that design, how these cars genuinely have really affected modern culture. And when I say that, I mean movies, TVs. What I have noticed about both of these models...
It's never the good guy that drives a Range Rover, is it?
It's never the good guys, is it?
No. That's true.
And I mean, tinted windows, you know, arms in the back, or white cars with drug dealers from South America.
Gangsters, layer cake, yellow Range Rover.
Oh, yeah, nice bright car. Yellow, yes. And of course, it all started from the Range Rover Classic, which was in the Rise of the Foot Soldier. That was the first sort of...
Gosh.
And that was... But then, back then, that was the stately car. The classic. Now it's just become sort of the thugmobile. And it's never the goodie.
But it was also the old, wasn't it? In that the Essex Boys, the.
Yeah, that was the rise of the. So that's how it all started. That's, I think, sort of, oh, we'll put that one in that one. And then suddenly you've got them, these in black.
Perhaps drug dealers like their kids to go to school safely as well.
That's what it is. And ride over cyclists.
Ride over cyclists.
So I think that's, they've become, and I Googled quickly just to sort of see, like, you know, what P38s or what L322s have been in particular. I genuinely couldn't find one where it was a main character. But they were in everything. I mean, like every single movie, there was a baddie in it. Or
I think the whole Jaguar Land Rover setup, they've got really good at product placement in films. If you watch the Bond movies, just became an advert for all these. And you see these in the background. But you're right, only at the bad guy's ice cave.
It's the same thing as now with the deal with... The fact that all the royal family drive Jaguar Land Rovers. Because it's seen as a British brand, so you instantly recognise them and think... It's a royal car, but at the same time, it's a royal or a crook's car.
It's as acceptable as a Rolls-Royce, if not more so today, I think.
Exactly that.
Not so good, because I had to lend Viscount Linley my Range Rover for the weekend when his broke down. So there we are.
Did he bring it back in one piece? That's the key factor.
Yeah.
Right. Now, talking of bad guys, I'm going to bring in Mark Perkins here, who's going to give us the final verdict, because he's been listening away. So, John, if you could shuffle your way out.
Yep.
Leave your cans, and Mark will shuffle on his way in. Right, Mark, come on in. Come and take John's seat.
Funny enough, we were just talking about criminals owning Range Rovers. I'm Mark.
Well, Morning, you got rid of that deadbeat John then.
Oh, yes.
Him out of the back. Well,
he won't last. No. He won't last.
Keep him awake.
So, Mark, how many Range Rovers have you owned? Have you owned them all, but the new one?
I think I've had every model, I'm a bit of a Range Rover buff,
So we've been banging on about these two. Obviously, they're Holland versions, hence the gun here. It's not just to keep the staff on their toes. Okay. You've had both.
Yep.
Now, we've sort of tried to be pragmatic with this, i.e. we know that the newer cars are always better to a point, but in their time, what would you have said is the better of the two? You've listened to these two waffle on about it now for 10 minutes. You make the deciding factor. What car is the better? The P38, the original, let's say, Chelsea tractor.
Try and put yourself back in the mindset when that turned up. You remember thinking, my Lord,
this
is so much better than the last car.
Well, you're going back to the old Land Rover days.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Land Rover was, I think, 60, 70 miles, showing my age now. Then what happened? The Range Rover came out, and it was a Land Rover that could do 100 miles an hour. What's going on? Stuff like that. And, you know, the shapes were there, a bit old BMC looking inside. Yeah. It was NASA. Yeah, it wasn't my cup of tea.
No.
But you stuck with it.
Because
it's great for towing.
No, Charlie Big Potatoes. Oh, that's what I've won. Okay. Yeah.
That's the strap line. Charlie Big Potatoes drives one.
This one is obviously the darling now, because everyone's going backwards saying that this is more of a Range Rover than the new one, which you drive one of the more modern ones.
Yeah.
You've had this. Would you, you know, do you have a soft spot for that car?
I think I probably. That one there is me. I did have one of them and drove it around for ages, and people said, oh, it broke down. Well, I went forever.
So you must have had the ones that Dom didn't sell them.
Yeah.
Dom sold hundreds of them, and all of them broke down.
Hey, I was very lucky. Great vehicles, all like they're strong as an ox and stuff like that. Yes, everyone moans about this or that for whatever reason, but...
Well, I always say, you know, any Jaguar Land Rover just wants to go home. They're like puppies.
Yeah, they drive themselves. you sit in it, well, nowadays, what do you get nowadays? You've got the radio on. Not radio one, because it's a bit noisy for me. Radio 2 or Melody or something like that. But yeah, they are just fantastic. There's not that. It's what preference and style, isn't it? Me, probably the slightly later one.
Yeah.
I think this is Range Rover.
Is that your call?
Yeah,
is your car back from the service?
Is your car back from the service?
I'll just call you back in 1 minute.
It wasn't it? Is your car back from the service? Yeah. So yeah, Mark's car has been in the garage. They do go there quite often, Land Rover. In fact, my Defender's got to go there next week.
Has it?
It's a problem. I think they do it on purpose.
Mine's just the service. You're okay.
So you think, of the two, you would definitely pin a 322, which is the darling.
That is it for me. But I'm not down in that vehicle. No. I had some great times in that vehicle. It's enough. Actually, met
anything
my
you
wife
can mention?
Driving that one. Yeah, right. She said it wasn't the money. It was all right. Well, she does like me.
Mark, if you're done and you've got to go and collect your car, thank you very much. Your deciding opinion is, unfortunately, Dom loses. And John, who we'll call back in a minute, has won the fight.
But Dom is a loser.
Well, that's probably
that
why.
That is the problem. I'm a winner. Well, no.
Thanks. We'll move on.
Right, thank you very much,
I've got more important things to do, chaps. Been a pleasure for you. Ta-da.
Bye-bye. Right, John, slip on back into your seat after all that dog's abuse you've got from the boss. But he did choose your car.
He did.
You know, on a good day, what we have decided, and I don't think it was good. I mean, you fought a brave fight.
It was unfair, but anyway. You
know, well, realistically, inevitable.
You had a puncher's chance, but I mean, realistically, it is.
And a punctured tyre.
Everyone does like this car. And from an auction perspective, people are starting to really just keenly look for nice low mileage versions of this. Mm. And I think that may sort of continue as we see more and more SUVs come into a classic market. You know, it's not just the old Land Rovers now and the Range Rover Classics and the old G-Wagons. We are starting to see the more modern cars come in.
Yeah, I mean, that particular model as well, I mean, it was featured quite heavily in the Clarkson's Farm series because he loved his so much back in the day. And they are having a significant following. Yeah,
exactly. Following. Right, so let's just round this love fest for Range Rover and these beautiful cars behind us with a few fun facts. Dom, do you want to kick us off on this one?
Do you know why it's called the P38? Now, actually, I didn't know this at the time.
Was it because it was full of filler?
Easy for you to say. Like the bloke who can't pronounce his T's and F's. Can't say fairer than that. Sorry.
God.
Why it's called P38? It's named after the room that the engineers and designers worked in at Land Rover.
I heard this.
Simple as that.
They moved them to a block and then the whole thing, because it was originally called Project Phoenix.
Phoenix and Discovery, but also called Project Discovery to hide the scent from the press, because they were also going to develop the car called the Discovery later on.
Keep it on their toes. So the P38 is the block that they designed it in. Yeah. Okay, I've got one here. Did you know that the prices of these two cars, and again, they are relatively bespoke, so that you can go high and you can go low on this. But back when this was released, and this is number one, by the way, number one of the Overfinches produced, it was a press car, which got loads of livery in it, and you can go online and have a look, £140,000.
Good God.
And they used to take them from Land Rover, they'd deliver them to Overfinch almost in, you know, almost as a spare chassis, almost sometimes before paint, £140,000 later. Now that's spectacular, but bear in mind, That was £70,000. That's a hell of a lot of money when you relate that
really
to when
statement.
It was.
Yeah. Real statement.
That was a hell of a lot of money. How about yourself, John? Any fun facts?
So, Range Rover built 30 322s for the 2003 G4 Challenge.
Oh, these are the orange cars, weren't they?
The orange cars, absolutely right, yeah. And so they... There were 16 participating nations, and they went to America, South Africa, Australia over 28 days. It was won by a Belgian fighter pilot called Rudy Thurlin. Rudy declined the prize of a brand new Range Rover, opting instead for two new Defenders. So read what you will into that.
He spent 28 days in a Range Rover,
won
it and went, nah, don't want one, thanks. It's the longest test drive ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all bright orange. I've seen a couple of those at auctions.
Yeah, with all the kit all over them.
And they're
yeah.
quite cool with the kit on. I'm not sure about the colour.
No.
I'd probably have to paint it. So I've got a couple more. So also in 2023, just last year, we sold an L322. It was a phase one. That at the time, we had an inclination, may have been the Queen's, but we couldn't quite get the proof. After all of our extensive press, which can be thanked by some of the people behind the cameras, we actually discovered that it was indeed one of the Queen's personal cars. But what did it have on the bonnet? It had one of those little silver sort of...
Corgi?
No.
Other toys are available.
Very good. Was it a dinky one?
That's your nickname, isn't it? Dinky. Sorry, kids.
What was it?
Some sort of dog,
it
animal.
It was a dog.
Not a whole.
It wasn't a corgi. It was a Labrador.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was obviously something down. So the car was stationed up in Balmoral, so it may have been where the...
There was one parked outside a local pub the other night, literally, and it had a warthog on the bonnet, so I don't know quite what they were trying to say.
Wife's car.
And then finally, the last and most important fact about, and it is about the L322 actually, is that it finally, in 2007, reached the peak of its notoriety, but it was finally immortalised, not in James Bond, not by royal families, it was finally immortalised by The Simpsons. And you know you've made it if you've on The Simpsons, let's be honest, awesome. That's it. Right, so... we've decided that we've got these wonderful cars. If you want to click on and follow on from this video later, please do so, because our driving episode, Throttling Classics, myself, Tom and Vicky will actually be driving these two cars around the Surrey Hills and just putting them to their test before we head over to the farmer auction. Right, as we put this out, we will be looking towards our forthcoming auction, which is at Windsor View Lakes. Now, it's the first time you'd have been to Windsor, isn't it, John?
First time as part of the company. Yep. I came there last year and had a look round.
Were you invited?
Sneaks in anywhere. Great venue, lots of space, so ideal. Yeah,
we have a look online for some early consignments for that one. It's middle of July, which is a great time to be there. And as long as it doesn't rain, which it hasn't done, touch wood, for so long. But what are your thoughts about the summer and the current marketplace? You think we're going to be absolutely fine?
Off the start of this year, where we had, I think, one of the best auctions I've had in the 6.5 years I've been here.
Rattled through, mate. We're
down at Ascot. Yep. We had 1,000 people come to our viewing days prior to the sale. We had 1,000 people there. 300 people sat down at 9 o'clock in the morning when the auction started. Yes. It's a good sign. £6.5 million worth of cars, almost 80% sold. I think we're just doing, we've hit a real purple patch. We're doing
Windsor's,
really well.
Windsor's a great weekend out. You can come obviously on the viewing days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But anyways, if you've got a car that you're looking to sell and you do want a free valuation, click on the link below or go to the Historic's website. One of these two will pop out and
John,
see you.
Dominic.
And they will come out and see you, give you a free no obligation valuation, and then you can see if you can get your car into the Windsor. And if you want to attend, of course, do come along. We'd like to see you all there. There's plenty of space. Nice. Look, there's dancing girls, not that sort of dancing girls. The nice place to eat, nice place to sit down, drink, and see the view, the auction, of course. Now, as I mentioned, at the end of this, you'll be able to click to follow and watch the Throttling Classic episode with these two cars. That's why we have the reference to these guns, of course, because they are Holland and Holland guns owned by Beretta, and this is my own very own gun here. It is something I'll probably use in the office later on to make sure everyone behaves themselves.
Yes, boss.
Right, that's about enough from me, from Dominic and from John. Thank you very much sitting here in with us. Thank you for these two cars for being with us and the vendors for loaning them to us, of course. Again, make sure you do click for free valuation in the link below. Visit the Historic's website, which is all new and rebranded. And we will see you next time on either the Roof Fuel podcast, Throttling Classics, or any of the other videos that we do here at Historic's Auctions.
Bye-bye.